today on Kugan Radio.
Hey, everybody. It's episode number 95, which we're tentatively calling. Maybe it will change in post, but I doubt it. Learning React. We've been thinking of doing a React-based podcast for a while, but it's kind of interesting timing for it because at this exact moment, if you were to scour all of CodePen, the actual application itself, you won't find any React. We don't have any production React code on CodePen yet, but we have kicked off a big new project in React and a bunch of related technologies, and we just thought, you know, this podcast is about what we're doing. It always feels very kind of real time, this podcast, and it's weird not to talk about it. So let's stop doing that and talk about it. And we're going to talk about it also in that classic way where we're not going to actually tell you what we're building. Sorry, but we'll tell you that we're using React and friends to build it. And in this, we'll talk in a meta sort of sense about how we came to choose to do that and what it's been like learning it and all that type of stuff. So the four of us are here that have been writing the most React so far, I guess. I suspect that everybody at CodePen will touch it at some point, but just for now, it's been mostly us four, starting with Rachel Smith. Hey, Rachel.
Hey.
Yeah, and Mr. Quazo, Alex.
Hey there.
And Tim Holman. Hey, Tim.
Hey.
Yeah, sweet. So it's us four who have been on this project for the most part. And I thought where we'd start was, I guess we made this choice while we were at our all team down in St. Petersburg, Florida, at Alex's house, which is now crazily like underwater.
It is. We're yeah. just getting out from under it. But we did have someone stroll by in a kayak, which is pretty cool.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. I heard about it. It's kind of a hurricane-esque down there. Probably not the first or last time that's going to happen. So we are down there, and we are thinking, and one of the reasons we were down there was to talk about kicking off of this project, which we have since done. And when you kick off a new project, it's often a good time to think about the technologies involved in that product. And we're like, maybe we should. This, you know, as you may know, if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, we're Rails and like MySQL, and we write a lot of JavaScript, but we use jQuery, but not much else as far as frameworks are concerned. I mean, I don't know. I guess you could look through our libraries director and you'd see Lodash and, you know, I don't know. There's a couple of libraries sprinkled in there, but not like framework style libraries. Our framework is largely our own. And it's kind of piecemeal, I guess. And it's doing a good job. There's not, you know, no hate on our existing framework. But we were kind of thinking about choosing something new. And React was on the table. Is that how it went down, Alex?
Yeah. So the most complex part of CodePen is obviously the editor. It's something that when we built it, it wasn't supposed to do half the things it does today. And we've always kind of tacked on more code onto it, tried to restructure it. I've rewritten it several times to do many and different things. And when we started this new project, we knew there was going to be a lot of complexity involved. And I've been kind of observing the front-end framework landscape, whether it be Ember or Angular or React, and looking at them and trying to understand the benefits, looking at the community and things like that. And the thing that seemed most appealing, and part of it was because it did some of the things that we were doing already that we kind of figured out through a lot of practice and rewriting of the code, was React. We ended up liking the way it managed state. We liked how it allowed you to share state and manage the complexity of the project. So that part was very appealing. And the idea of also doing our front-end code in a more modern way was also really appealing. We have been writing this kind of JavaScript since, I think, 2008. And it's incredibly similar. You know, it's still jQuery. It's, you know, we still write classes, and we try to structure everything in kind of plain JavaScript classes, but it is still very much stuck with the tools that we were building in 2008, and it's 2016. So we thought it's kind of time to modernize our workflow and do a lot of things that we know we should be doing, like testing and things like that on the front end code. So there was a lot of reasons why we chose React. And at the end of the day, we didn't have perfect knowledge over what we wanted to go with, because I don't think any of us had for long periods of time worked with any of these front end frameworks.
Yeah, we didn't. We certainly weren't like, well, we all have robust experience in all of the modern front end frameworks, so let's pick the one that fits the nuanced situation perfectly for us. It's just, hardly anybody gets the opportunity to make a perfect decision like that. I think we probably went with it because it, you know, in some sick way, seems like the new hotness or whatever. It's got plenty of backing behind it and a lot of buzz behind it. And we tried it out and it worked pretty good. We had some, you know, we didn't like build full web apps in it, but we've like played around with it enough to be like, oh yeah, this looks nice. I certainly went through that, you know, like, I don't know, when you see jQuery and stuff like get made fun of, if you've ever seen that or heard people like, I don't know, slam it on Twitter or whatever. It's not like the APIs of jQuery that they're mad at. What they get mad at is like, oh, should this button be disabled or not in jQuery? So in order to figure that out, you're responding to all these potential input scenarios and you're writing all this logic and stuff that gets called all the time. And it just doesn't feel right. It feels kind of soupy and weird. And then you see somebody write the same thing in React and you're like, well, it just kind of checks the state. And if the state decides it should be disabled or not, it is or isn't. And just the way that the logic was structured felt pretty good. And then another part of this component was Redux, which is a kind of a friend of React. And that it started to, I don't know, it clicked for me a little bit. Not that I'm like the worst of the four of us at this stuff, so I'm not trying to like tell you how it is. But I do note that like I know that Alex was like working from this like kind of large JavaScript or JSON object that represented the state of our app. And then when you read about Redux, you're like, it's basically this large chunk of JSON that describes the state of your app. And I'm like, that's that seems like we're getting there already, you know, like the way that we have naturally started working seemed to flow into that.
Yeah. And if to understand why we create this big JSON state of our app, you have to understand that even though the editor just seems like an editor, at the same time, we support a mode called Professor Mode. And Professor Mode is where you can edit a pen and then have students who are following you. Essentially, you become the professor. They get to get the updates on their laptops or their computers. And so we basically send out the state of the app to a bunch of followers. And that was the only way that I could figure out how to make that work, is to represent every little UI state, every little data state in one piece of JSON that I could send around the internet. And so when we saw that in Redux, we were like, wow, that's incredibly similar to what we do now. So it was very
appealing.
I wonder
if I could try to set the stage a little bit. It's like, imagine in jQuery land, when you click a button to open a modal, you would write like a click handler for the modal. And you'd be like, okay, when I click on this, trigger this function, and that function's job is to open the modal. Okay, great. But we're like, that's not going to work, because I want that modal to also open on the student's computer, as Alex was just explaining. So like, there's no click event happening on that student's computer. I can't do it that same way. I don't want to send a click over the wire and like fake a click on the student side to open that modal. That's not how we're acting anymore. So let's never bind anything directly to like click events like that. Let's dispatch an action that says open the modal. So when you click, the action gets dispatched that says open the modal, and then that happens. So then what we can do is like dispatch the same action on the student side to do it. So there's less like directly tied stuff to actual DOM events. I don't know if I did the best job explaining that, but I think in jQuery land, it kind of really encourages like pretty tight binding between DOM stuff and the reaction to it. And we like moved away from that. And that's yet another thing that we kind of get in this React Redux land is a kind of that actions mentality.
Definitely. I mean, that was kind of the only alternative to this world we were living in, where we had to share state amongst different browsers, which is, it's just, that is not your typical jQuery use case. It was either simulate clicks and functions and try to sync them all up, or just share a piece of JSON and have everybody sync up with that. And that was the simplest solution. That's what we went with. And that's what you get out of the box with React and Redux. And it's actually been pretty excellent.
So it's not only React and Redux. That's what I meant when I said at and friends at the beginning, is that we get Redux as a friend of React, not required, but that's a big part of what we're doing. That seems to be like pretty fundamental to our stack. And we're using Babel as well, which seems like it always comes along with the ride with these technologies, but it allows us to write JSX, which is the weird HTML thing in React, and it allows us to, like, you know, just yesterday Alex put a commit and is like, we really need to start using the spread operator because it's so awesome, and like, that's, you get to use that because Babel browsers don't actually support it or whatever. And then Webpack as well is the thing that like smushes all the, allows us to write import statements and all that. So it's like, when you say React, I think a lot of people actually mean React plus Redux plus Babel plus Webpack.
Yeah, it definitely causes a little bit of anxiety when you start naming all the buzzwords. It took me like a good month to stop getting angry at adding an additional buzzword to my vocabulary. It's a little overwhelming at first.
And why didn't we pick Ember? I don't know that we have a good reason for that that I know of, especially because we're already Rails. So it seems like a lot of Rails places would use Ember just because of the lineage. Like Ember comes from Rails people. Who knows? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, Ember, I do follow Ember, and they are a really excellent project. There's been a habit of stealing a lot of good ideas from Ember, and that's one of the interesting things. They come up with a lot of great ideas. Why we ended up choosing React, I don't think we fully vetted Ember as an alternative. I don't know if Tim or Rachel have any experience with Ember, but I didn't actually open up an Ember project. I just kind of follow their community a bit.
Yeah, I think in a weird way, like, we all had kind of scraps of React knowledge. I definitely had done a little bit before.
All I know about Ember basically is, I don't know too much about it, but I just sort of, you know, the general thing of where you have your, like, whether frameworks, like, opinionated about certain things or not. And Ember's more opinionated than React, in the way that React is sort of, it's like very view-based. And then you can bring in like Redux, which is like a flux methodology, into it to handle your state. Like you can sort of make a lot more decisions about where it lives in the context of everything else. And I think that's what appealed to me about React, is it, you were sort of buying into just sort of this, tying state into the views, and you write, you know, all of your, you either pull in other frameworks or you write your sort of like model logic yourself. And I think that's why React appealed to me.
It should be noted that we're using React in the context of Rails, in a sense. We're not using a React router, for example, to change URLs or anything. That stuff is all still happening so far in Rails. So even the route, even the main route itself that gets loaded up is just a Rails route. And then React kind of takes over from there. And that was one of the considerations, is that we're not rewriting the entirety of CodePen in React. We're just writing this one new thing in React and kind of seeing how it goes, and then potentially rewrite other stuff in it kind of as needed. So that was certainly a consideration, like, how well is this going to play with not rewriting our entire act. So I think after it was decided, we know the project, at first we were like, hey, maybe we should rewrite something really small in React instead of everything ever. And then it's just, I don't know, for whatever reason, we decided not to do that. Because I think when you rewrite something small, it's like, what small? Like, you can't just pick a module to rewrite React in. At least it needs to, like, cover the entire page. So it's like you're going to end up rewriting a ton of stuff, even if you pick something small anyway. So
down the rabbit hole.
Down the rabbit hole. So I think, you know, Rachel really stepped up and we kind of were like, okay, well, you get to be the lead on this project because you just learned a lot about React right away and seem to have like the best understanding of it, I think, of us so far.
Yeah, I'm curious, Rachel, about like when you went, was this your first full-on React project or was it something that you learned? Like you basically went heads down into this and started learning about React. Was this your first project or had you done anything before on it?
No, I hadn't really done anything with React
okay.
before. Besides like maybe like putting like maybe making a component in CodePen okay. and like just trying to see if I could write it. But I'd never actually done any sort of project with it, which is why I remember being a bit nervous and we're like, we're going to do React because I had like zero experience with it. So I was like, this could be really bad because I don't know how this is going to go. But I mean, then once we made the decision, I was like, all right, I'm just going to do this now. I'm just going to learn it. So, yeah. And that was good. Yeah. It was fun. It was actually really fun to learn something new.
Might have been good that none of us, all of us had a sprinkling of knowledge, but not too much, so yeah. that there wasn't like one overwhelming personality that's like, look, I've done this before. This is how it goes. You know, we're all kind of figuring it out.
One of the things that was difficult with learning it is that I wanted to head down some sort of path with it as far as the decision making goes. With regards to like the architecture of the whole thing and that sort of thing. I wanted to be like, you know, follow so-called best practices or whatever. But because it's kind of a new technology and there's Facebook using it and stuff, but there's not like a huge number of people using it. And when you Google like best way to do this or most efficient way to do that, it's just like a bunch of blog posts where everybody thinks their way is the best way. So it was hard for me to like figure out what was best practice, you know. I think Alex and I ended up coming to the conclusion we're like, if Facebook's doing it that way, it's probably right. Like, which isn't the best way decision-making process. But like that's where we ended up because we were like, it's too hard. It's too hard to tell at the moment, you know, where my component should live in the folder structure of a React project. So we'll just do what Facebook does.
Well, there's decisions right and left. Yeah, naming decisions and structure decisions and, you know, code flow decisions or whatever. Redux structures kind of asks of you some things, but certainly not all things.
Yeah, I mean the Redux stuff was a little bit more clear than the React stuff, I think, because I mean to learn Redux I watched some videos on Egghead by Dan Abramov, who's like the creator of Redux. So, you know, like having the guy who wrote the library or wrote the framework is set out like this is how you do it. It's like you can be pretty safe in assuming that you're using it how it's supposed to be used, which was very handy.
Yeah, I mean, I have to give like big props to Dan Abramov because he's really gone out of his way to document so many patterns in a really extreme way. Like I find myself Googling things and finding answers on Stack Overflow that come from Dan Abramov, and they're extremely well thought out, extremely well communicated and explained. And that was a big part of our, well, if Facebook's doing it, let's just go ahead and accept that this is the way we'll do it until we think otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I still think that was a really good decision. We actually like went and kind of scoured GitHub projects and looked at like real world React and Redux projects, as many as we could find, and just looked at what kind of conventions they had, and ended up simply taking them carte blanche. I mean, we had a lot of conventions at CodePen already that we decided to do away with, because this is such a new world that we're like, let's not bring any of our previous conventions or styles. Let's accept that this world is an established world, and we're going to simply develop in that manner until we're knowledgeable enough to like think otherwise.
That's exactly what happened, and it seems like a good one too. And it seems like this is so popular that it'll probably serve us well. You know, I think if we like hired some like React expert to come in and look and stuff, I'm sure they'd find stuff that we're doing wrong. But for most part, I think they'd be like, "Oh, this looks like a pretty normal React Redux project." I would hope, anyway. This episode of CodePen Radio is brought to you in part by Media Temple. It's a hosting company that you've probably heard of before, but they do some hosting that you may not have heard of before. For one thing, you know, much like CodePen itself, they offer hosting on AWS, on Amazon Web Services. They'll help you get set up with hosting on Amazon Web Services. They'll help you move a website to Amazon Web Services, and they'll help you manage it and like get the most out of it. So with their support staff, who you can call and talk to and submit support tickets into, some of the best in the business support people can help you do AWS if you know that that's what you need. Not only will just kind of anything on AWS, but they also specialize in WordPress and WordPress on AWS for some like super high power, super reliable, high availability WordPress hosting. So, you know, if that's what you need, if you know you need to like some serious WordPress hosting, they totally offer that at Media Temple and can be your kind of go-to server team for that. So thanks so much to Media Temple for sponsoring CodePen Radio. It is so weird. It's the weirdest thing ever. If anybody is out there, you know, that hasn't dove into React but does other JavaScript stuff, I mean, I don't know what to tell you other than like, it's just mind-blowingly strange how things operate. You know, like in jQuery land, it was like you could imagine how it's almost like how using Sass isn't that weird. Like you can imagine pretty obviously what's happening in CSS land. You're like, oh, it's a variable, I get it, it turns into a thing. Or, oh, nesting, oh, big deal, it just makes that selector have the parent selector on. And it's like not that hard to imagine what's going on. Like in jQuery, you can be like, oh, on click is just like the same thing as doing like, you know, add event listener or whatever. It's just kind of like, you know, syntactic sugar for that kind of thing. Or it's not that hard to reason about what jQuery is doing. In React, it's like, I have no idea where event listeners are getting bound to and how, where, it, when it decides to change HTML on the page. In jQuery, if you want to change the HTML on the page, you have to like call the HTML method and change it. You're on that yourself. Like in React, everything is just some library. You know, React is making the decisions about when and how things happen. You don't tell it anything.
That's one of the things I've been learning more and more about lately, is how that, because it's like a little bit more complicated than you don't know when it's going to change. You can actually control when it changes, but it takes time to learn the rendering pipeline of React. And like how it chooses to render certain parts of the page or not. Because I just thought this thing just like re-rendered randomly. But it's
random. You know, it just like render not random.
Yeah, exactly. It just like, when you first use it, it's just magic. You know, you like, you change a piece of the state, and then that shit shows up in your page, and it's like,
yeah.
But you do have fine-grained control over what it renders when. Like they provide all these functions within the components. You write, so you know, should component update, and component did update, and you know all these things, which sort of lets you block something from needlessly re-rendering over and over again. It took a while to figure out that it's not just magic that you have no control over. You do have control over, you know, whether it should re-render or not. You just need to use the methods they provide.
Yeah, and it's incredibly interesting when you start following the path of how re-rendering is considered. And I think for me, one of my big disconnects was we were using a library that I had been using for a long time and completely not understanding what the library was doing. And when I somehow got into looking at the code, I ended up looking at the source code on GitHub for this library. It's a React Redux Connect library. Comes very standard. If you do use React and Redux, you end up using this third library almost automatically. And I didn't understand what it was doing. And when I finally understood, I finally understood how it was re-rendering, how it was considering how to re-render, it was like this huge epiphany. And sometimes it's such a, some things can seem so obscure because it adds a lot of sugar for you. It's completing tasks for you that you didn't know you needed to complete. And even though we've chosen to use the least number of projects as possible, we've decided to kind of hand code as much so that we understood things. It still can be kind of complex as to when it decides to render. And then when you learn how it decides to do that, it's such a fundamental thing to building your project. It's surprising that it took me as long as it did after working with React now for about 4 months. I've been kind of obsessed with it and working on it even before we started our new project. So it definitely just, some things simply take time. And that's been one of the most difficult things about starting a new project with a new language in ES6 and a new library in React, is that some things aren't just, you're doing some things on faith that they work and that it makes sense, and then you'll understand them later. So it's been a little bit, it's been like a nice learning curve. Now it's kind of eased out.
We're still in the learning curve, but we are being very productive. I mean, this project is like coming along. So it's been pretty satisfying that way. I wonder if there's like we could draw some curves to post in our Medium blog post on this, where it's like the curve in jQuery. You're like, oh, I want to open a modal, so I'm just gonna do like on click and then open modal or whatever. I know I keep using that thing, but it's very satisfying right away. That freaking modal is open in like three lines of code, and you're like, sweet. Like
the main way I think about the differences is that when you kind of learn, even when you're learning JavaScript for the first time, the tutorial is going to be like, write something in the console, and it's going to happen. When you write HTML, when you write CSS, it's always linear. It's like this runs, then this runs, then this runs, then this runs. And I think that was the big, you know, like thinking in the state, thinking like, oh, the modal is open now, and then something else is going to make the modal happen, and it's not going to happen in a complete linear state. Other things might jump in between now and then. I don't know. That's kind of the big difference mentally for me.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So like I don't know. I mean, if I had to say it, I guess you feel less productive like immediately. If you're just like, I just want to open this modal, it's like, no, you don't get to just write three lines to open that modal. You need to really think about the structure of all of this. There needs to probably be state for that new modal. So you're like adjusting the initial state of the entire application. And you have to, you know, I'm going to make a modal component, but then the way we've been doing it, we make these container components too that are in charge of like passing the state as props and all this stuff. Like sometimes it feels a little ridiculous. You're like, I'm basically writing a one-click handler, and I have to touch like 8 files, and you're like, oh my God, what the heck? But then if you do it that way, like things fall into place better. Like the longer you write, the more satisfying it is to write React, because ultimately you're not touching all those 8 files because they're already there and they're already doing smart stuff. And I don't know, you're just like, you know, like there was this moment where like Rachel was working on this one feature that was like kind of fundamental to the to how it all worked, and Tim Holman, you were working on some other feature, but they were so related that, you know, as long as the state got updated in the right way, it just kind of automatically worked with Rachel's stuff. And it's like, I don't know, I didn't write the code, so I didn't get to feel the satisfaction of myself, but I imagine that type of stuff feels very satisfying. You're like,
oh, it definitely feels just great.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm the least, like, I really honestly am like the most language agnostic and framework agnostic person. And there's been so many times with this where I make this noise to myself. It sounds like this. It's like, And it's like when my whole existence is being questioned. And then Rachel's actually been insanely patient with me. I'm like, Rachel, we need to talk about this right now. And then generally the conclusion to the whole thing is like, that's just how it is, Tim. It's okay.
I think
thank you so much.
I was thinking this morning about just conceptually, like how you would explain React with Redux and why it's so difficult, even for someone who's like an experienced JavaScript developer, like someone like me who's like dealt with very logic heavy front end JavaScript code, like that controls a very complicated UI. I've done a lot of that. But the way React and Redux is set up is almost like you're dealing with like, say, a NoSQL database on the front end, in your front end. And the only thing you can do to that database is like send in queries to it, essentially, that changes it. But you also have all these relationships in that data. So to update the data in a way that makes sense in the front end, you have to figure out how you're going to like make a query that updates, you know, all the things that are related to each other, and at what point in the chain you figure out what those relationships are and how you can match them up. So, and that is like really complicated to wrap your head around. You can't say like, oh, I just want to open the modal. It's like, or I just want to, you know, change a piece of the UI. That if that UI is connected or related in some way to other parts of the UI, which is inevitable, you have to like get that, figure out that relationship, and then create an appropriate query that's going to, update everything. So it's almost like dealing with, you know, a NoSQL database and how to manipulate the database, which is like a difficult problem in itself. And it's not something that front-enders, even experienced JavaScript developers on the front-end, are really used to. That mental model is not something they're used to doing. So that for me is why I think we've had that, like Holman and I both had situations where it's like something that would have, in the so-called traditional jQuery way, something that would have been really simple to write, we're sitting there staring at the screen going like, how, oh my God, like where in this weird, front-end database chain do I link up these items and send through the correct data?
Yeah.
You definitely make a long-term investment in the project as you're working on it, because it's so intensive. You're kind of going over everything with a fine-tuned comb. Like if we were going to put together a new landing page and maybe need to change a button text or color with JavaScript, we would still go with jQuery. I think we wouldn't like build out a new React project, because this is more for complex UIs than it is for your simple kind of intro to jQuery tutorial. You make a big investment in time and effort that it takes to put it together, but the idea being that it's very rock solid once you have it. It lets you manage that complexity that we're starting to deal with more and more.
Yeah, the payoff is that model, that front-end database model, is that Tim can be sending through stuff, queries, and I can be sending through queries. And because we're both just like updating this Redux state, and we're not messing with like each operation just updates a state and returns like a new state. We're not mutating each other's state. So we can be working on separate things, but they're also closely related or dealing with the same pieces of the state. And we know we're not going to get in each other's way and like create problems, which you would have in jQuery land. Because if you're both messing with the same object and mutating it, doing different things, then that's how you get into like problems where weird stuff starts happening.
So there might be like a limit of how complex this thing. I mean, maybe that's not the right way to say it, but like if you do everything right and you write tests like we have been doing, and you just kind of have this main structure that it's less dangerous. Like the complexity doesn't just skyrocket or go off the charts like it can with like a jQuery soup kind of environment. But doing things the right way like tempers the amount of complexity that this thing experiences.
Yeah, it lets you, sometimes you write yourself into a corner a little bit without that much formalism. There's one very specific part of the CodePen editor right now where I wrote myself into a corner where if I change this, it's going to change like maybe the behavior of five different actions in the editor. And having a formal way to interact with the data is probably, to me, it seems like the biggest payoff. And it lets us all kind of update the data. And because there's a formal way to update the data and receive the updates, I can count on the fact that Tim is writing a feature that's going to change the data. I'm also writing a feature that's going to change the data, and we're not going to step on each other's toes. We're bringing it together. That's kind of bringing back to what Rachel was saying. And this is the first time, I think, at CodePen where we have developers actively working on almost the same exact code. We're like right next to each other, and it's been really, really nice working next to everyone, because those kind of that formal API of updating the data keeps us in sync.
Yeah, it's really, these are like really obscure benefits, but they are important. Yeah, you know? It's kind of hard to talk about, you know, you like the sales pitch for React, it doesn't include that. Like that doesn't make for a very compelling argument to use the library. But once you do switch, you kind of see it, you know. I don't know. I would find it hard to write that marketing pitch.
I heard React is good. Isn't that the
yeah.
pitch?
That's the better pitch. Yeah. We should leave it at that. All right. Until next time. Until next time, we heard React was good. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Ciao. Bye.
Seven six zero three one eight.